As it was emphasized last time by Baha in his talk, now we know substantial information on the neutrino mass spectrum and mixing. We know the two mass splittings, and we know two of the three mixing angles. So the next goals now for the next step of the study of neutrino oscillation is to find out the value of the theta-1-3 angle and establish the mass hierarchy of the spectrum, which means basically the sign of this mass splitting, delta m squared 3-1. To make things clear, I write down here my terminology. If it's positive, I call it normal hierarchy, and if it's negative, inverted hierarchy. So this is one of the next goals, major goals, and of course there are others not related to oscillations, like the absolute scale of the neutrino mass and the nature of the neutrino, whether it's Dirac or Majorana, and other exotic properties beyond the standard model. But in this talk, I will focus on these two remaining oscillation parameters, and I will show the potential of supernova neutrino studies to probe these parameters. So I asked myself, why the information we have on these two parameters is so poor? And the reason is because there is some sort of conspiracy. We have one mass splitting bigger by a factor of 10 or more than the other. And the theta-1-3 angle is small, as we know from the Shaw and Palo Verde experiments. So this means, as Baha showed in his talk regards supernova neutrinos, solar neutrinos, it happens that in most of the situations that have been studied so far, the neutrino oscillation pattern reduces to an effective two neutrino problem, and corrections due to theta-1-3 are small. So what are the possibilities we have to improve our knowledge? One is to...
Would you mind standing on screen?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Maybe it's better to use this. So one possibility is to try to improve our experiments to be more sensitive. And another option is to find a physical situation in which the effects of the theta-1-3 angle are big. And we know that this happens if we have MW resonant effects in which a small angle produces big effects. This is what can happen in a supernova, because the right conditions are met. If you calculate the resonant density, you find that for 10 MeV neutrino, which is the range of energy of supernova neutrinos, the resonance density is 10 to the 3 grams per centimeter cube, approximately. And this is met inside a supernova, while it isn't, for instance, in the Sun. So this is just an invitation to show that even though supernova events are, of course, rare, it's worth maybe to study this a little bit. However, one should keep a realistic perspective on supernova neutrinos and keep in mind that the study of supernova neutrinos involves many many ingredients, say, which represent a big potential of this type of study, because you can probe a lot of physics, and also limitations, because if you want to probe certain parameters, all the others play the role of uncertainties if you don't know them very well. So this is an anticipation of results that I will show maybe later. If you calculate the calculation of the difference of the electron neutrino flux detected at Earth and produced in the star, depends in this way on the conversion probability, and it is also proportional to the difference of the original electron neutrino fluxes and the non-electron fluxes, nu mu and nu tau fluxes. So you can immediately see that the effects observed will depend on the difference of the original fluxes, which we don't know with good precision. So this is an uncertainty due to astrophysical origins. And the conversion probability depends on some jumping parameter. Basically, this is the diabeticity parameter, and it depends on the density profile of the matter of the star, which is another source of uncertainty or something to be probed. It depends the way you put it. It depends on the type of the progenitor, and it can also be influenced by what happens in the star during the explosion process. There is a shock wave that propagates through the star, so this profile can also vary in time, and if I have time I will say something about this. The jumping probability depends also on the atmospheric mass splitting, and we know it, but there is still certain error. And you see there is also the solar angle, so this is also known with certain error. But these two parameters are in the process of being measured precisely. So in what follows, I will focus on these aspects, which is also a good opportunity to introduce. Yes.
I have probably a trivial question. The very first equation you have.
Yeah.
Why isn't the right-hand side just proportional to the X neutrino flux? Why is it the difference? Wouldn't I still have the potential of producing extra electron neutrinos even if the X and E neutrinos were originally equal?
So I'm not sure that I understand.
The first approximation, they're all equal.
Right,
from the thermal thing, so if they're so, all equal, if they oscillate, nothing will happen.
So if you have that electron neutrino,
MSW oscillations.
Yes, but they still.
But still, if you whatever interchange you apply between two equal fluxes, you don't see a difference.
Other than the so-called early newies.
Right.
The spectral differences that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, this is an anticipation just to give some feeling, but I will show these aspects in more detail. So a little introduction on supernova neutrinos. They are produced inside the star by E plus E minus annihilations and also nucleon-nucleon bremsstrahlung, and they are produced in all the flavors, neutrinos and antineutrinos. I don't want to go through this, but I can only say that the amount of energy released in neutrinos is something like 99% of the whole energy released in the explosion, which is basically the gravitational binding energy of the core of the star. And on the basis of some, you can calculate some estimate of the diffusion time of the neutrinos, and you find something over the 10 seconds. So in 10 seconds, this amount of energy will be carried away by neutrinos. It's very powerful. And estimates of the energy of supernova neutrinos give average energies in the range of 10 MeV.
Question. What about the neutronization burst?
That is certainly present. It's the very early signal coming in neutrinos from a supernova. The luminosity is much smaller than the thermal emission of neutrinos. So this signal is very interesting potentially because it gives information on the early dynamics of the star, and so it would be very, very interesting to see it. The luminosity is much smaller, so in super K you can expect something like 20 events from those.
That's technical help here.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
May I go ahead or should I? Okay. So besides the early universe, the inner part of a supernova is the only place in which neutrinos are thermally trapped, and then they diffuse out. As a zeroth order consideration, you would expect them to be produced with a thermal spectrum, so a Fermi-Dirac spectrum. And on the basis of different interactions of the different flavors with matter, we expect a certain hierarchy of the average energies of this spectrum. In particular, you expect hotter nu mu and nu taus because they have only neutral current interactions due to the energy being below the threshold of a production of muon and taus. And also, the electron antineutrinos are expected to be hotter because they interact mainly, they are kept in thermal equilibrium by interactions with protons, which are less numerous than neutrons, which keep in equilibrium the electron neutrinos. So we should keep in mind that the medium in the study is highly neutronized, so there are more neutrons than protons. Also, naively, we would expect the luminosities carried away by the various flavors to be comparable.
How are you going to discuss the critique of this?
To discuss?
The criticisms about this.
Yes, yes.
Will you discuss that?
Yeah, it's next. Yeah, indeed. So I wrote here a naive argument because now I come with a recent discussion about whether this is true and how big the hierarchy is. So the physics is more complicated. There are a lot of processes entering in the neutrino spectra formation. And it was, for instance, recently pointed out in this paper that diffusion must be taken into account, and it gives relevant effects for the non-electron flavors. So it's what happens is that you would expect more hotter nu mu and nu taus because they decouple from matter at an inner radius and therefore from a hotter surface in the star. But there are collisions with nucleons, and these diffusion processes is expected to make the hierarchy of energies less strong. So in this paper, it is estimated that the hierarchy may be not so strong. So differences between the average energies could be as small as 10 or 20%. So still there is some difference, but not as strong as it was naively considered, especially in neutrino-oriented papers. And also it was emphasized that people sometimes talk about equipartition of the luminosities, so of the energy, so equal luminosities, but this is an approximation, so there can be a factor of two of difference.
I never really understood what was new in this, because the standard codes that exist due to neutrino diffusion, in fact, they're very carefully not only due to the elastic scattering off of nucleons, but even the quasi-elastic scattering off of helium is in the standard codes. So in the high temperature hierarchy, it comes out of the hydrodynamics that those are results of populations that have neutrino diffusion in. Thus, I don't really understand what Georg was saying about why he
Well, Rick, I don't know what Georg was saying, but I know what Adam and I were saying 2 years ago. It never got implemented in a calculation, and that is that when you have an interacting medium, particularly with those repulsions in the spin isospin part, a lot of the cross section for neutral current scattering will involve excitation of spin sound waves in the medium, an appreciable part of it. I think Georg is probably more on the Bremsstrahlung side of that, but there are lots of processes that weren't in the standard codes and may or may not be in what people implement because you can't tell, that tend to share the energy. And I believe that's what Georg had in mind, but I will say that Adam and I were talking about that for a long time ago.
But it can't be just naive diffusion, because there's certainly lots of diffusion mechanisms that are in the American
code. But in particular, the big energy loss mechanisms, energy equilibration mechanisms for the neutral current processes weren't in there in anybody's.
Well, that's what you're about to emphasize is the NN bar, which you call it, you mean the Brent, what you call them.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what he said. Is the thing that's not in the same.
Yeah, that he's great overemphasized. He overestimated that, but on the other end, there's something else that does the job. So who cares?
The other thing that worries me is that the part of the diffusion, at least the one code that claims to be successful still is Wilson's code, which a lot of people are very skeptical about. But and important, I mean, an essential part of that code is the fact that they have these doubly diffusive instabilities, these neutron fingers that form. Those neutron fingers actually transport lepton number. The whole principle of the lepton number transport is fast compared to the transport of energy.
Is that in the core?
It's in this hot bubble region, so it's right in.
This is really, I mean, because in a way, this
it's right at the place where the neutrinos decouple.
At the
neutrino sphere. Yes. So that's another issue, is that maybe this problem is not completely decoupled from the mechanism itself, because Wilson were right, and you needed something of this sort to actually generate the hard neutrino spectrum essential for the explosion. Then that means that the diffusion is really a complicated thing. It's connected with the supernova dynamics as well.
Yeah, indeed. So I think that all these conclusions must be taken as basically an indication of the fact that the problem is really complicated, and there are still many aspects that are not clarified, starting from the fact that we don't know exactly how a supernova explodes. So that is certainly has to be kept in mind, and so the point I want to make is that in the light of these considerations, any analysis that wants to find out to probe Theta 1-3 and the mass hierarchy should take into account that there are big uncertainties. Another big uncertainty, well, maybe not the most severe, but certainly important, is the uncertainty on the density profile of the star, which is usually taken for what is relevant for neutrino conversion as the profile of the progenitor star. This is justified at least for the first few seconds of the duration of the burst, because neutrino conversion occurs in rather peripheral layers of the star at densities smaller than 10 to the 3 grams per centimeter cube, which are not reached by the shock wave at least for a few seconds. I will comment about that later again. So from first principles, which are mentioned here, like purely radiative energy transfer, constancy of luminosity and opacity of the medium with the radius, one can derive a power law for the radial density distribution that goes like r to the minus 3. And this figure shows the difference between a numerically realistic calculated profile in certain convenient units and the r to the minus 3 profile. And you see that they agree reasonably well, and the power law like r to the minus 3 is the one that fits best this profile among the possible power law profiles. However, you see these bumps, and so for the purpose of calculating some adiabaticity parameter, one can use basically the slope locally, and so locally you can fit this profile by still a power law with a different n, between like something like 1 and 5. So still the point is that you cannot take just n equal to 3, but allow some uncertainties. And I wondered what the deviations are due to, and I think that this result relies on certain assumptions, and if you allow some certain amount of convection as a mean to transfer energy, and you allow non-constant luminosity and opacity with the radius, then this breaks down and you can have certain deviations.
Well, what sort of code does that dotted line come from?
This is taken from this paper, which in turn refers to a paper by Japanese authors. I don't remember now the names. I can find out if you're interested. It's not a very recent paper. I remember it was maybe a few years ago. Maybe. No. Okay.
That structure might come from the shell burning.
I think so. Yeah. You see some certain point which look like critical points. So maybe there is some I don't know. Maybe there is some breakdown here of this thing like constancy of luminosity or. Yeah. So it would be interesting to know what this structure is due to.
And how important that this pump is going to be for the adiabaticity of the transition and all of the conclusions. Are they really important?
As I write here, you can locally fit these bumps with a slightly different slope. And so take again this and just change n. And instead of taking 3, you can take between 1 and 5. So since the adiabaticity parameter gamma goes like 1 over n, you have a deviation as like by a factor of 1/3 or 3 over 5. So this is the feeling of the amount of
the resonance in the period is 1/3 grams per centimeter cubed. But where is the resonance period in the plot? That's all that counts here.
Yeah. The units are such
except
that.
Except that it's well
prior to the I remember I did that, and the one is somewhere here, and the other one is somewhere here. Yeah, you're right. That's all that counts. So this is, I just want to flash this, just to mention that it was pointed out recently by Richard Skirat and George Fuller that the shockwave actually at some point reaches the relevant layers of the star at density of 10 to the 3 grams per centimeter cube, where you have one of the two resonances. And this modifies the profile of the progenitor greatly with respect to the power law. You see there is some depletion and there is some shock front. So this changes things dramatically after something like 5 seconds from the beginning of the neutrino burst. So this has a significant impact on the conversion effects and should be taken into account. Okay, so as a summary of this first part, I can say that this gives a feeling that astrophysical and neutrino aspects of the conversion of supernova neutrinos are equally important and great, very much related. So it's important to consider both of them and so deal with large astrophysical uncertainties if you want to probe the oscillation parameters, or you can use if you measure theta 1/3 and establish the mass hierarchy by other means, you can use this information to do astrophysics with supernovae. So now I go back to the results I have shown at the beginning and explain in more detail the conversion pattern of supernova neutrinos. To start with, I think it's useful to start with the level crossing diagram. And this is shown for normal hierarchy in which nu3 is the head state. So you can see that there are two resonances, one given by the solar a pair of parameters, and the other one is controlled by theta 1/3 and the atmospheric splitting. What happens is that neutrinos are produced at very high density in the star, and I will call F0 their original fluxes. And as they propagate through lower density regions, they undergo these two resonances. Then they get out of the star and propagate in the intergalactic medium and then reach the Earth, where they are detected. And maybe they even cross the Earth before they are detected. Depends on the orientation of the experimental site at the time. And the Earth matter effects, there are regeneration effects due to this pair of parameters in the Earth. So you see that there are these two resonances, and the effect of the conversion due to these two resonances is to induce some permutation between the spectra, energy spectra of the neutrinos, electron neutrinos and non-electron neutrinos, so that you see what you see at Earth is an admixture, and the coefficients can be derived by this following this diagram, and these are the results. There is some pH, which is the transition, the jumping probability in this resonance, and the character depends strongly on theta 1/3, as I will show. And this P2E comes from this, and this basically the probability that Well, no, this, I'm sorry, let me say something more. So the conversion is always adiabatic here for LMA parameters. So we know that now the parameters are in the LMA region. So this is adiabatic. And this comes from basically the projection of these states on the flavor states. For electron for the new antineutrino part, there are no level crossings, and so there is no pH. So the resonance is in the neutrino channel. So there is no, this factor is not here. And as I said, in absence of Earth crossing, these probabilities are just the squares of the sine and the cosine of the solar angle. So as I said, if you have an hierarchy of the original spectra, the presence of these terms induce an hardening of the spectrum with respect to the expectations in absence of oscillations. For inverted hierarchy, things are very similar with a very important, however, difference. And the difference is that if you take inverted hierarchy, nu3 is the lightest state, and the high-density resonance where theta 1,3 enters moves now to the antineutrino sector, and so things are very, the expressions are similar, but pH is now here in the expression of the antineutrino, electron antineutrino flux. So this gives already the information that there is a sensitivity to the mass hierarchy, because the mass hierarchy determines where the resonance is, if in neutrino channel or antineutrino channel. The dependence on theta 1,3 enters the jumping probability up to small corrections. Up to small corrections, this pH probability is the only place in which theta 1,3 enters. So this can be calculated according to the usual Landau-Zehner formula, which is good for small mixings, so it's valid for small mixings. And this shows the dependence on the tangent square of theta 1,3 of these parameters for the power law profile and the relevant numerical values of the other parameters. So you see that with the increase of tangent square of theta 1,3, pH turns from 1 to 0, so from complete breaking of adiabaticity to adiabatic transition. And the transition between the two regimes is in a very interesting region of tangent square of theta 1,3, between 10 to the minus 5 and 10 to the minus 4. This means that ideally, if you know the astrophysical parameters reasonably well, you can probe this region of tangent square of theta 1,3, which is very interesting. I think it's one order of magnitude at least below the expectations of sensitivity for neutrino factories or so. So this is just to say that what I will talk about in what follows is how to treat data from supernova neutrinos, and I will concentrate on two signals from basically the two biggest detectors we have right now, Supercamiocande, in which the main signal is due to electron antineutrinos on protons, giving this charged lepton signal in water. And for a supernova, for a galactic supernova at a distance of about 10 kiloparsecs, this gives many thousands of events. So it's a huge signal. And the other signal we consider is...
Of course, instead of telling us the number of events, I'd rather you tell us when it's going to happen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
it's... It was in my lifetime.
It's already happened.
Yeah. These events are rare. The rate of supernova explosions in our galaxy is estimated to be between 1 and 3% so... Even though it seems that for strange reasons we have not had one in the last century and a half or so, but this is the rate.
So we do.
Yeah. Maybe if we are patient, we can see one. Okay, so the other signal is, I will consider this signal, neutrinos, electron neutrinos on deuterium in snow, charge current process. And for the same parameters, this will give something like between 200 and 300 events. There are other signals which are interesting, and but in what follows, I will basically focus on those two. Okay, so now the point, this is what basically the title of my talk refers to. How can we reasonably extract information on Theta 1-3 and the mass hierarchy, considering the fact that as I said, we have a huge amount of parameters about which we don't know much. So I counted 14. There are four average energies of the originally produced spectra, the luminosities in the various flavors. These are chemical potentials, which are called pinching parameters, which can be present in the Fermi-Dirac spectrum of the originally produced neutrinos in the star. Then there are these two parameters. This rho zero is the overall scale of the mass mass density profile, which clearly depends on the type of progenitor. And this is the slope parameter. If you take a power law, this is the n of the power law. And then the relevant oscillation parameters, which we know from atmospheric and solar neutrinos.
So, how do you pinch parameters enter?
Oh,
what were you going to say?
Excuse me, just a minute. How can the question is the pinching parameter.
Yeah. How did they enter?
You mean in the Fermi-Dirac spectrum, they?
You how they enter the predicted fluxes from the supernova?
The question is about their physical origin, why they are there, or?
No, I think I sort of remember why they're there, but I.
So this.
But how they make any effect on those?
So this is an effective description. So from numerical calculations, it is found out that Fermi-Dirac spectrum doesn't really fit the predictions. But it fits if you introduce an effective chemical potential, which is called pinching, which has basically the effect of shrinking a little bit.
Well, I thought that was very early on, right now. You mean way out there in near the neutrino sphere, you have appreciable pinching? I didn't know that.
She's saying that asymptotically, you just look at the integrated spectrum, total fluence of neutrinos coming from the supernova.
Oh, I see. This is an analysis of people's predicted output spectrum.
Predicting?
The pinching parameters are determined from people's neutrino spectra from collapse calculations, the external neutrino spectra.
Yes.
Is that right? Okay. Then they're not very big.
No, they are around one or two, even zero. So.
I thought they were related to the internal description.
No. They refer to the final spectra.
Okay.
But it's really important because if you miscalculate, for instance, the total amount of neutrinos heating, it matters. It turns out that pinching changes the numbers by about a factor of two.
Really?
Yeah, we were really excited about how much energy you
could. No, I didn't know that. No, thank you. Yeah.
Star by neutrinos, but it goes away because the cross sections rise so quickly with high powers of energy to all the nuclei that pinching, reducing the high energy tail,
yes,
really cuts down the average cross.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
Yes. Okay, so as I said, that we have many parameters. How to deal with them to find out information on Theta 1-3 and the mass hierarchy? Here I list two possibilities. One is to make a global fit of the data. We will have data from Supercamiocande, SNOW, and other experiments around the world. And it's possible to fit all of them and consider as fit parameters both the oscillation parameters and the astrophysical parameters. So this is an extensive approach. You calculate your chi-square, minimize, and you find out the best values of each of the quantities. So we have one of, we have Vernon Barger and Danny Malfeccia, who together with a collaborator did this in a recent paper, and also these other authors explore this way. And it seems to me, but we may ask them, that this method necessarily requires a certain reduction of the number of variables you can use as your fit parameters. So I have the impression that this is very powerful because maybe at a certain point it's the right thing to do, a fit of data. But one should be careful because you may lose a certain possibilities because you are forced to make certain assumptions just to be able to apply this method numerically. Another way is to find certain observables and study them analytically, certain observables which are particularly sensitive to theta 1-3 and the mass hierarchy, and relatively easily studied analytically. And this is a more focused approach, which has been suggested by these authors, and I'm now working on that too in collaboration with Alexei Smirnov. This is an approach which focuses on certain parameters you want to study, not all of them. So focuses on, for instance, theta 1-3 and the mass hierarchy, and treats the astrophysical parameters as uncertainties to probe the oscillation parameters. The advantages I see of this method is that there is some analytical study possible, which gives physical insight of the phenomenon, and also the analytical treatment allows to find out, for instance, the generalities between the various parameters and understand how model-dependent your analysis is. So to keep parameters under control, I think. So this is a figure taken by this paper by Barger and collaborators. What they did was to perform a fit of simulated data of registered at Super Kamiokande and SNOW. And this is the example of what they find if, for the case of inverted hierarchy, for a very small theta 1-3, this column, and a larger theta 1-3 in this column. Notice that you can obtain an estimate of the total binding energy released in the explosion, the average energies of the electron antineutrinos and the originally produced, and the average energy of the non-electron neutrinos produced. So this is very interesting. And about theta 1-3, they find that for small values, they find that they can put an upper bound, and for large values, a lower bound. And the upper bound is very interesting. So 10 to the minus 4 is an interesting number. The other approach, as I said, consists in considering certain observables. And this is a list of possibilities. So if you consider events, charge current events, due to electron neutrinos or electron antineutrinos, you will see a certain energy spectrum, and the data can be treated in such a way that you can, for instance, consider the low energy tail, the events collected in the low energy part below some certain cut that you choose, the high energy tail, the width of the spectrum, which I define in this way as a dimensionless quantity, and the average energy of the spectrum. And a possibility which I found convenient to take is to take ratios of these quantities as they come from neutrino signals and antineutrino signals. So I take this R low, which is the ratio of the lower of the number of events in the low energy tails at SNOW and at Super K, for instance. And the same I do with the high energy tails, take the ratios. With the widths, again, I take the ratio of the neutrino observed spectrum and the antineutrino observed spectrum, and they take the ratio of the average energies. So the way, the reason for which I take ratios of neutrino and antineutrino observables is because, as I have shown, the mass hierarchy, depending on what the mass hierarchy is, you have the resonance in the neutrino or in antineutrino channels. So one of them will contain pH, which means theta 1,3, and the other one will not. So it's convenient to take these ratios. What I'm doing in this work in progress is, for instance, study if these observables can at least distinguish between extreme possibilities. This, for instance, these three possibilities. So one of them is to have completely adiabatic transition in the high density resonance, so this pH parameter equal to zero, which corresponds to a sine square of theta 1,3 larger than about 10 to the minus 4, as you may remember from the figure of the dependence of pH on sine square of theta 1,3. And I take these two possibilities, pH equal to zero for normal hierarchy and for inverted hierarchy. And then I take the other opposite limit, pH equal to 1, so completely non-adiabatic transition. And in this case, the hierarchy really doesn't matter, because for completely non-adiabatic transition, it's like having no transition. So the two, the neutrino and antineutrino channel behave the same way. Okay, so briefly, let me comment a little bit more. So in this possibility scenario, you have pH equal to zero and normal hierarchy, which means that the resonance is in the neutrino channel. Since you have adiabatic transition and theta 1,3 is small, this means that all the originally produced neutrinos go into non-electron neutrinos, almost all of them. So you have complete permutation. All the electron neutrinos you see are due to the originally produced nu mu and nu tau. Conversely, for electron antineutrinos, this doesn't apply because the resonance is in the other channel. And you have some weak permutation proportional to sine square of theta 1,2 as according to the level crossing I have shown before. So what do you expect in this scenario? If you take the ratio of the width of the neutrino signal and the width of the antineutrino signal, this will come from Fermi-Dirac, because it comes from the electron non-electron neutrinos. And this is an admixture. So this will have a larger width. So the ratio of the width is expected to be smaller than 1. And this will be harder, because it comes from, again, from the harder nu mu and nu tau spectra. And this, again, will be softer because of that mixture. So the ratio of average energies will be larger than 1. In the case you have inverted hierarchy, things go the other way. So the transition is the permutation is complete for anti-nu-e, and there is a partial permutation for nu-e. And here the coefficient is cosine squared of theta 1,3, so cosine of theta 1,2. If you take the current bus fit, this is close to 1, something like 0.75, and this is 0.25 or so. So this is a strong permutation, and this is a weak permutation. But you see, this gives different observables. This will give a larger ratio of width, which is larger than 1, and this will give a ratio of energies, average energies, which is smaller than 1. In these scenarios, the amount of permutation is the same as here and here, so strong for nu-e and weak for anti-nu-e, and the results which will be somehow in between these two cases. So this is an indicative presentation, and then I went into more quantitative analysis, which is shown in these scatter plots. So I have taken, again, this kind type of events. And these are scatter plots. And on the axis, you have these variables. Here you have the ratios of average energies. the ratio of the high energy tails, and this is the ratio of the widths. So what is found, this is found from a calculation in which I scanned over many parameters which are listed here. And for instance, I think I have been very conservative because I have taken, for instance, ratios of luminosities varying between 0.5 and 2. And if you are interested in the hierarchy, I took ratios of the temperatures or of the average energies, which can be as small as 10% or 20%. And I also included, of course, the possibility that the hierarchy might be larger. So I drew some boxes here which show some regions of this parameter space in these three variables, which can in which there is some sensitivity. So if the result of your experiment, for instance, is in this region, you can exclude this case, the case of normal hierarchy with adiabatic transition. And basically, this would be the candidate option. So a very small PETA 1.3, which corresponds to non-adiabatic transition. And there are other examples. For instance, this box will data in this region will point towards this possibility, and data in this region will exclude this possibility and leave us with one of these two.
How much does this depend on the definition of gamma and R?
I'm sorry?
I mean, depending on where you make your cuts for defining gamma and R, how much does this affect these plots?
Well, gamma, it doesn't depend on cuts. So gamma is the width.
Right. What do you mean by the width? The width, you have to define the width, 10% to 90%.
How are you defining the width?
The width of the distribution.
Yes.
Depends on where you cut the tail.
Let me.
And high and low depends. So you would like to optimize the cut.
Right. Let me say something about that. So this is the definition of the width. And it depends on the threshold, for instance, you take as at low energies, and here there is no need to cut, so because at a certain point you will have no events, and so I think cuts are important for this kind of study. So if you take a tail of the spectrum, and this I'm happy that you asked that, because the choice of the cut is important it needs to be optimized. So that this is what I did, and it turns out I maybe have a slide about that. That there is a certain choice of the cuts which is very convenient. So it can be seen analytically that a certain choice of the cuts produce certain cancellations in the astrophysical parameters. I will say more about that. But yeah, there is a cuts needs to be optimized.
You don't use any information from time distribution. You just assume from time distribution.
Yeah.
Assume an interval.
Yes. 5 seconds. Yes. Yeah. Exactly. 5 seconds or so. Not more than that, because then shockwave effects may enter in the game and things are different. So the first 3 or 5 seconds. Okay, so this relates to the question. It is possible, as I said, to make an analytical study of these quantities. In particular, I like very much the study of the high energy tails, because it turns out that very interesting simplifications and cancellations occur in this case. So, depending on the choice of the threshold, you can find that this ratio of tails is equal to a function of the survival probabilities, which depend only on the oscillation parameters. And it contains these two quantities, which are, I call them alpha and alpha bar, which are corrections due to the contributions of the original nu E and anti-nu E fluxes. So if you take a cut which is at very high energies and you have a certain hierarchy of the energies, the events you have there will be dominated by the contribution of the hotter nu mu and nu tau flux, with a certain contribution of the colder, say, original nu E and anti-nu E flux. So this is this contribution. So there is this function times a factor which in principle depends on these two fluxes and therefore on astrophysical parameters which are not very well known. But it turns out that if you choose the threshold in an optimized way, there are cancellations. And this is, I cannot go into the details too much about it, but you can have an intuition of why this happens. The reason is that, as I said, there are high energy cuts which make certain corrections small, or at least they can be studied more easily. And then the fact that the fluxes which dominate the high energy tails are the fluxes of the non-electron flavors, which are similar between neutrinos and antineutrinos. So if you take the ratio of these two tails, it's the ratio of the events in the neutrino channel and events in the antineutrino channel. But due to this similarity, certain quantities cancel out. And another nice thing is that, of course, what you see is not the original spectrum, but it's a convolution of the original spectrum with detection cross-section, detection efficiency, and so on. And the nice thing is that for these two processes, the cross-section has almost the same energy dependence. So the fact that the energy dependence is similar implies that cancellations due to this fact are valid even on the observed spectrum after you do this convolution. So this fact doesn't, say, spoil these advantages. So, as I said, there are certain advantages because certain cancellations occur and therefore certain uncertainties are eliminated. So this is a plot which shows the dependence of this ratio of high energy tails on the sine square of theta 1-3 angle. And the black line is what you would get if you know perfectly the astrophysical parameters and you choose optimized cuts. In this case, you get something which is just a function. So, but of course, due to uncertainties, there is a big spread, and basically including all the taking variables in the intervals I have shown in the scatter plots, so doing the same kind of taking the same uncertainties, you find that the value of this quantity is between the solid lines for normal hierarchy and between the dashed lines for inverted hierarchy. So, for instance, here I show three examples of possible experimental points. And for instance, you see that if your experimental point is here, I took two different error bars. One is for 8.5 kiloparsecs, which is the distance to the galactic center, and the other one is higher statistics due to a smaller distance. So in this case, you can conclude two things. You can conclude that you don't know about the mass hierarchy because both of them are allowed. So you can have this part for inverted hierarchy and this part for normal hierarchy. But you can put conditional bounds. So if you have an inverted hierarchy, your theta 1-3 needs to be smaller than about 10 to the minus 5. And if you have inverted normal hierarchy, theta 1-3 is larger than more or less this amount. So in other cases, for instance, in this case, the mass hierarchy cannot be established. So both of them are allowed. But in the case of inverted hierarchy, you have a strong upper bound. which agrees with the upper bound found, for instance, in this chi-square analysis. And, well, analogous consideration, if you are here, you can put certain bounds. So I come to the conclusions. The conclusions are that supernova neutrinos are good to study both neutrino physics and astrophysics. However, if one needs to take into account large uncertainties, especially if one wants to probe theta-1-3 and the mass hierarchy. Another interesting option is to use the knowledge of these parameters from somewhere else to do astrophysics. About this possibility, I have shown that it is possible to identify and study certain observables in which are particularly convenient to treat these uncertainties. To establish the mass hierarchy in this type of study is not easy. In many cases, you are not able to tell. But in any case, it's interesting to see that you get conditional bounds. So according to the assumption on the hierarchy, you get a certain bound on theta-1-3. And these bounds are numerically interesting because you can probe down to theta-1-3 smaller than 10 to the minus 5, which is very interesting.
Delta 3-1 square, you fix the oscillation parameters.
I consider them to be known from experiments which will be done in the near future.
And
so
what
10% on tangent square of theta 1-2 and 20% on the atmospheric splitting. So that is another source of error, but I'm less worried about that than on the. It is, yes, it is.
And the delta M squares don't matter very much. They just push the density a little bit.
Right. Yeah. I that is minor.
Theta 1-2
changes. Yes, changes.
Since the oscillations tend to change the high energy tail distributions more than any other part of the spectrum, have you thought about going back to some of these old ideas about nuclear cross sections that you can pull out, say, supercomputer conduct from the angular distribution, like the reaction on oxygen to produce fluorine gives you a little bit of backward peaking?
Yes.
It might not give you the count rates that you get from other signals, but that thing is very distinctive. It's very sensitive to the part of the spectrum that's changed most by the oscillation. What might make it interesting?
I'm not sure that I followed the whole argument.
Well, for super K.
So you are talking about some subdominant reactions that give smaller rates.
Smaller rates.
But So, interaction on oxygen.
If the charge current reaction on oxygen to produce fluorine, for example, if the temperature is above about 5 MeV for the degrees, then you begin to see that in the angular distribution.
It
does such a beautiful job on angular distributions in that detector. We did calculations many years ago for Kamioka, but Super K is such a much better detector. I wonder what things would look like with the modern analysis for that detector.
Yeah, also there are detectors which are planned to be even bigger than Super Kamiokande. So in those, I think that the statistics will be significant enough to really go into the detail and explore also the effects of these processes. Yes.
You say you stuck to times in the first 5 seconds to avoid the effects of the shockwave. Will the statistics be high enough in, say, Super K to be able to actually see the effects of the shockwave in the neutrino spectral?
I asked that question myself. I was wondering about that. And the reference I have is this paper by Skirat and Fuller, which is very brief. And basically, they don't go into the experimental sensitivity of the phenomenon. I have the impression that first of all, it depends on the parameters. So for instance, depending on how steep the shock front is, there will be some resonance at some point at the shock front. And depending on how steep the shock front is, which nobody knows as far as I know, you may see some signal which is stronger or weaker. So it depends on many, again, on many uncertainties. But another aspect is that after 5 seconds or so, the luminosity of the flux decreases. And I'm not sure if the statistics will be enough. I have the impression that it will not, but this has not been studied in the detail yet.
Something else I wanted to mention, it may work the other way around in the sense that we need to know the neutrino parameters to figure out what the effects will be in the supernova rather than using this as a diagnostic
of
neutrinos.
Yes.
But something George and I have been worrying about is the fact that these oscillations could affect some of the synthesis that goes on in these shells. In particular, a really amusing example is that we think most of the boron in the galaxy comes from reactions of neutrinos on carbon in the carbon zone, and this crossing occurs at the base of the carbon zone. So if there was an inverted hierarchy, then you change the distribution of, that is, if there's an oscillation, you change the distribution of neutrinos, and you change the synthesis that results from that. And the case that looks really amusing is the one where there's an inverted hierarchy, where the antineutrinos are the ones that are becoming hotter. Because then it turns out that the ratios of the boron isotopes that one produces from neutrino spallation changes in rather remarkably. And this is kind of interesting because it's the old problem of where boron 10, boron 11, and so forth. The old neutrino process work that was done without any neutrino oscillations produced an embarrassing amount of boron 11 and not enough boron 10. And having these oscillations actually helps that problem a lot. And then that's connected with the cosmic ray issue of how much of the boron comes from cosmic ray spallation.
So, but the effect.
What about lithium?
Lithium is harder for us to calculate, but it has the same effect that
the point is there is.
You'll increase the lithium as well.
Suppose I say that the boron 10-11 ratio that I observed, the excess is due to the supernova, so it's cosmic rays plus supernova.
Yeah.
Then can you answer the question of what does that imply for the lithium, or that's just too uncertain?
You can estimate it, but it's not as certain as the boron calculation. But it's amusing. We may have to know all these numbers to be able to do a reasonable job on the neutrino process.
So does the lithium feed back to cosmology, Jared?
No, it's to the cosmic ray.
Okay, but not the cosmology, not the early universe per se.
Indirectly, in the sense that it could be in the very early galaxy, some of the lithium that we see in the very metal poor stars was produced by some of these processes very early on. So the estimate of the primordial lithium can be affected by this. One of the problems is if you just take cosmic rays, most estimates suggest that it's subdominant to the primordial value. But if you add in early supernovae, who knows?
I believe that the effect of neutrino oscillations on synthesis of elements required parameters which are now disfavored. So I remember that maybe too big delta m squared, or I remember that for currently favored parameters, that scenario may not be viable.
Yeah, it depends. It would be much better if the delta m squared gave you a crossing deeper in the star, because the very most interesting cases where you could really have smoking guns for oscillations involve the neon zone, and unfortunately the crossing is outside of that. But the carbon zone synthesis is interesting, and some of that synthesis is what we call post-processing, and that is that there are elements that are produced because of the initial neutrino flux that are killed when the shockwave goes through because of the heating. And therefore, the only things that survive to contaminate the galaxy are the stuff that occurred after the shockwave passed through.
Mm-hmm.
So you have this additional complication, and maybe opportunity, that when the shockwave passes through, the material begins to rarefy, and then oscillations come back. So there are plenty of possibilities for finding something interesting.
That is interesting, yeah. So, but what is the density of the carbons in
It's the 10 to the 3, which is the basic.
Oh, it's
carbon.
There.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Yeah, then it's interesting.
We'd rather have it in the neon zone because there's some wonderful elements in the neon zone that would have been smelting guns, but unfortunately.
Yeah.
One problem, I think, about getting the parameters is, what is the value of, of theta 1-3, the critical values of theta 1-3 to distinguish are what, between what and what?
Remember that window in the figure was between 10 to the minus, say 10 to the minus 5 and few 10 to the minus 4, which is the transition region between the non-adiabatic and the adiabatic character.
And the problem is that it's very unlikely that any terrestrial experiment is going to probe that low.
Yeah.
It will just tell you. Well, I could tell you that theta 1-3 is too big, it won't distinguish between 10 to the minus 3 and 10 to the minus 4.
Well, the neutrino factory can. The neutrino factory can get down at least 10 to the minus 4 and possibly 10 to the minus 5.
In the long, long future.
In the long future.
Okay.
So it's a competition between the long future of neutrino factories and the supernova rate.
Next week.
Questions? Let's thank this again.